Oh, I'm waiting for my party tonight.
We will reconvene the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue, and we're going to start our discussion today with Measure 50, one of our very favorite subjects on this committee. Paul and Dave, take it away.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue Office, and Dave Eck, Legislative Revenue Office. We have put together a research report for you, and then we have the full copy of it. It's Oregon's Property Tax System, Horizontal Inequities Under Measure 50. And this was something that you had directed us to do back at the beginning of the interim. And really, the report goes back to a hearing you had, the committee had in Tigard in September of 08. And I kind of started at that point and walked through. Remember, you had testimony from the people that really had played a key role in designing it. Former House Revenue Chair Tom Bryan was there, Jim Scherzinger, and Tom Linhares from the Assessors Association. Talking about the rationale, you had some testimony from individual taxpayers that were asking, why am I paying a lot different tax bill than my neighbor, and my neighbor has the same market value as my house, and that was really the genesis of this. So what we did was we built on some work that Multnomah County had done. As you recall, Chair Ted Wheeler had really looked into this issue and had the county assessor's office there do a lot of work on it. We built on that. We included Multnomah County in our analysis, and we also brought into Deschutes County, Jackson County, and Sherman County as for a rural county. So that was the database we used, and we looked for situations where we have, we looked to try to measure the degree of horizontal inequities, and horizontal equity, not inequity, but equity, is defined as a situation where people in equal circumstances pay equal taxes. So that is the definition of horizontal equity. We usually spend a lot of our time talking about vertical equity, but horizontal equity, it assumes equals are treated equally, and a standard fairness measure in taxation. Well, what we're seeing under Measure 50 was that equals with equally valued property, equal ability to pay based on their wealth, were paying a lot of different tax burden. And of course, the designers of Measure 50 recognized that, and that's why they exempted Measure 50, the elements of the Constitution of Measure 50, from the uniformity and taxation requirements in the other parts of the Constitution. So what we tried to do is document that, and this is the result of our work, and we thought what we'd do is kind of walk through this with you. I've got a one-page summary that I'd walk through with you, and then you can have the whole report for your reading pleasure. And happy to talk with you any further about the components of it. We have a big appendix with the statistics in there, a lot of which you saw at your May meeting, some of the detailed statistics. So this is really a summary of a lot of that. And then I thought when we got through with the summary and answering any questions you have about it, we'd ask our assessors who helped us on this come forward and talk a little bit about what they're seeing in current valuation trends for the 10-11 tax year. As those, remember the way the tax year works, the 10-11 property taxes are based on values as of January 1, 2010. So they're processing that information now, and of course they'll be preparing tax bills here for next month to go out. And we're seeing some very interesting trends, as you might imagine, in market values, particularly in Deschutes County and Jackson County as well, and around the state. The key findings of the report, the most obvious one is that our search for horizontal inequities, our conclusion from the analysis we had that they are very widespread in the four counties we looked at, that we see it widely spread across market value classes, and we looked in detail at that. We saw a lot of variation within all of those market classes, and the ratio, what we used to measure the variation was the ratio of assessed value to real market value, or what we call Measure 50 to Measure 5 value, because Measure 5 is market value. So the ratio of measure 50 to measure 5 value varies considerably among properties within within all of the market value classes we looked at. There doesn't appear to be a real systematic variation in that ratio, and I think this is something Multnomah County found, too, when they were looking at their data. So, in other words, we see it for low-valued homes all the way up to very high-valued homes. And to look at the specific numbers, if you look on the back of this one-page summary, you can see these are we didn't include Sherman on this because we had, what, I think 350. So we had a relatively small sample, but we did see a similar pattern. But in this chart, we've got Jackson, Deschutes, and Multnomah County. These are for 09-10, so this would be the latest property tax year we have. But remember, these are for January 1-09, so we've seen, you know, right about the beginning, early stages of the property value decline we're in now.
So these are from January 09 to January 10.
These values are January 1, 2009. So the way you have assessed value as of a particular date in January 1, 2009. So the property tax bill you paid in November of 2009 was really based on the value assessed at January 1 of 2009. And then the property tax bill you have coming in the mail here shortly is based on January 1, 2010. So if you look at what we've done is break down that ratio of measure 50 to measure 5 value into to segments or increments of 0.05. So, for example, a value of 0.3 means that the property is assessed at 30% of its market value. So you can see where the variation is. There are not many in the extreme tail, but as you get up toward 30%, or especially toward 40%, for example, 40 to 45% of market value, Multnomah County has over 11%. These are all single-family residential property. We do have commercial and industrial property in our database, but we just focused on residential for this analysis.
So the 0.4 to 0.45 means it's 40 to 45, the assessed value is 40 to 45% of market value.
Yes, correct. So now, and you know, that's very significant. If you have equal valued homes, let's say you've got a property that is valued at 50% of, let's say you've got a 0.5 ratio versus one that's 0.7, and you can see you've got over 10% in the 0.65 to 0.7 range. Well, that person that's assessed at 0.7, they have the same market value versus the one at 0.5, they're paying 40% more taxes for the same value property. So it is very significant for individual taxpayers, and that's why you had, you know, some constituents coming forward and saying, well, what's going on?
And they're starting to realize it.
Yeah, so that kind of, you see that kind of variation. Now, we did see more, and you look at this chart, you can see it's all three counties exhibit quite a bit of variability. And, of course, the reason for that, and we do have the examples, again, some of which we talked with you about last interim, but I put them in the text, is to show you how it does happen. I mean, it's not it's basically the mechanics of Measure 50. If you have different market value growth rates after the fixed assessment date under Measure 50, which was 95-96 assessed value minus 10%, well, over 15 years, you're going to have property values grow at different rates, depending on that what's going on in that region and what's going on within that local area. So that's what accounts for that variability. As long as you're going to have differential growth rates, then these kinds of ratios inevitably are going to be different for those properties. You can also see that as I said, all three of the counties exhibit a lot of variability, and you can see that they're pretty widely spread around the 50% range. And in fact, if you look at these overall, the values for the overall average measure 50 to measure 5 ratio for those counties was for 2010, were all varied in that 50 to 60% range, So with Jackson County, for example, at 62.8% on average, Deschutes at 57%, Multnomah at 55%.
Yeah. Where are you finding that?
That's in the big text.
Oh, okay.
The next chart shows you that what we wanted to do was look at, well, let's take a range that reflects the median home value for the state and for most counties. And so we looked at 200 to 300,000 market value, a single family residential property. And you can see that the variability, again, is pretty widespread, with a lot of properties falling in that, most of them in the 40 to 80% range. But again, 40 to 80% means one person may be paying double in taxes what another is paying. And so this most common range show that there's, you know, a 15 to 20% tax differential is not uncommon at all in this range within the individual counties. Now, of course, the world is changing on us, and the world is a lot different than the designers of Measure 50 were making their decisions in, and indeed, a lot different than why people reacted. Remember the rationale or voter reasons for supporting Measure 47 was that they didn't get the tax relief they thought they were going to get under Measure 5. And what was eroding that was increased assessed values. That was because market values were going up. Well, you know, this is all designed in this context of residential property going up in value consistently. And, of course, that indeed is what happened for the 10 years after Measure 50 passed. Well, now we're into this period where we're seeing a decline in values. Now, that doesn't eliminate a decline in market values. That doesn't eliminate these horizontal inequities. And what I did in the text was put together an example. If you look on page 8 of the big text, I put together an example that shows how you can have properties declining at differential rates and creating these horizontal inequities. And so and what that shows is that I started out with a property 200,000 and one 150,000, assessment ratio the same, but one is declining 7% a year and the other is declining 1%. So after 5 years, their values are about the same, and then but their maximum assessed values are much different, because the maximum assessed value under Measure 50 is still going up 3% a year off the much lower value for each of those properties. So in other words, as long as their assessed values stay below their market value, then that locked-in differential is going to stay in place. So as long as they're declining at a different rate, you're still going to get these growing horizontal inequities. Now, where things change is, and in my example, I'm just about the point where they do change. Where they change is when market value declines enough to where it becomes less than the assessed value, the maximum assessed value under Measure 50. Because remember how it works. The maximum assessed value or the market value is your assessed value, whichever is less. So the assessors go through to the 3% per year calculation from your base, and then they compare that with their estimate of what your market value is. So the assessors will talk with you a little about what they're seeing now. And to give you a preview, we're seeing a lot of, because of the collapse in the housing market, we're seeing a lot of these properties getting at near or actually at market value. So they're going to be assessed at market value because that's the lower of the two. And then again, that's not something we envisioned would happen under in the housing markets. As I point out here, we do assume at some point that we will begin to see appreciation again and back to more of a normalcy, because that's been the longer-term trend. If that happens, we certainly expect these horizontal inequities to grow over time, because we're going to see differential growth rates across regions and within regions. The final thing I would add about the summary, I just started not to give you a detailed analysis of what the options are, but started to look at what some of the options to consider. And most of these are ones you've talked about or had some discussion either in hearings for this committee or there was some discussion in the Revenue Restructuring Task Force last interim that looks some at these issues. But on page 14 of the big text, is where I started to kind of lay out what some of those are. And these are really things to begin thinking about. All of them have flaws. And, of course, I think the trade-off and the trick for you will be to try to develop solutions that will help alleviate the horizontal inequities while not creating other problems, particularly around the unpredictability concerns that were the reasons behind Measure 50 in the first place, unpredictability of year-to-year tax bills. If you look at the options there, what I put down was, as you recall, during that hearing in Tiger, Don McIntyre suggested that a valid approach would essentially be to abandon the maximum assessed value calculation, go back to a market-based system, and lower the rates to be consistent with where we are currently to make it revenue neutral, basically. Of course, under that system now, with falling market values, you'd have falling property tax revenue. So there would be a downside for local governments if that continued. On the upside, if market values begin growing back to their historical pattern, you probably see stronger than the 3% growth over time. By the way, property tax rates based on that 09-10 data are now about 0.95% of market value. They're about a
statewide?
Yes. About 1%. So they're about
so they're very close.
Well, the measure 5 limits were 1.5%.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
So we're about 1.5% of assessed value.
Got it.
Now there's some bond capital improvements and so forth that can make that over 1.5%, but right now we're at about 1%. So
the value.
Yes, and of course what happens is if we continue to see these market values decline, that effective rate will rise on average. So it may push us up closer as if this period of falling prices continues.
Which is not going to.
Yes, well. I'm out of the
bend.
Madam Chair, I'm out of the prediction business. And, you know, I think there are some ways you could design this so that you could incorporate some proportioning when you see rapid changes in market values and have, you know, proportional adjustments. Under the old levy-based system, you had the 6% limit, and so it wasn't purely a market-driven system. The assessed value may be, but the rates could not rise more than the 6%, or the levy couldn't rise more than 6%. Another issue that you've talked about and was discussed, particularly looking at options in the past, has been to rebase residential property to market value at the time of transaction. And that's the Proposition 13 example in California. Probably the biggest advantage of that is it does generate revenue for local governments. But you can make the case that over a long period of time, it does generate some equity in the system, that at some point, whenever this property is sold, then it will go back to market value. So every property kind of has a long-term rebasing to it, assuming it's sold. The downside is if you look at any point in time in the short term, you're actually going to have more horizontal inequities because you're going to have the new home buyer, 100% of market, assuming that we're above, that the assessed value is lower, you have a new home buyer that's 100% of market value, and then, of course, the older couple that's been living in their house for 30 years is going to have a lot lower assessed value. And that's been the experience in California. Some other suggestions would be to establish an assessed value range to market value range, so there'd be an acceptable range, and that once you got outside that range, you would make adjustments in the 3%. So it would be like a 3 plus, and it could be a 3 minus. So you adjust more or less than 3%, depending on if you're above or below that range. And then you could have some time period in which you're brought into that range. So that's a formula you could design for the assessors to apply to individual properties that get outside that range. And the final suggested approach is to basically revisit the issue that was part of Measure 50 in 97, and that was to exempt Measure 50 from the uniformity and taxation requirements and the cost. There's actually two sections in the Constitution where that appears, two articles. That could be repealed, and then voters, of course, would have to do that, and then direct the legislature to develop a remedy that could solve that, solve the horizontal inequities in the most efficient way. And now the advantage of that, it would be flexible. You'd have a statutory changes. You'd be able to adjust that with changing conditions.
Thank you. And Paul, you just did an amazing job on this report. And Day, this is really a very valuable document as we move forward on this. Are there questions from the committee? Senator Hess.
Thank you. I agree this report is very thorough, just rock solid. And I looked at your policy options, as you called them, in the end. And I was just wondering if, Paul, if you were king, which one you would choose, how you would do this, what would make the most sense to you?
Well, I know I'm not going to be king, so I mean, I guess it doesn't matter what I say. It won't happen. But, you know, I do think and recognize this at the time that, you know, I mean, they teach you in basic tax theory that, you know, you're trying to look at what is an appropriate base and what's an appropriate measure of ability to pay and for a tax. And, you know, with income, you know, we make adjustments, and there's certainly, it's not a black and white that this is income and that's not for tax purposes, and those are policy decisions around that. But if you're going and looking at a wealth tax, which property is, and property tax is, and of course it's a narrow wealth tax because it's really real estate property, the best measure of ability to pay is market value. I mean, that's what the market's willing to pay. That's the only real objective assessment you have of its value. So once you move away from that, I think you're going to run into some other issues. So, and that's what we've seen. The voters obviously wanted some additional, greater certainty over their annual tax bills. But moving away from market value, I think, created a lot of these difficulties. And I think to try to find a way to move closer to it without losing some of the advantages would be a good direction. Now, that's easier said than done.
So then that would be a referral to the voters to change that, and maybe, say, if you did that, take away the Measure 50 limit, so it would go back to market value, which would have this huge, you know, increase if it's the same percentage. So then would it make sense to how would you keep revenue neutrality there?
Madam Chair, Senator Hass, there's a couple of things you can do. You can use market value, but you can have a uniform assessment ratio. There are states that assess residential, that assess different classes of property differently. They'll give them a market value, but they'll assess residential property at, say, 50%, commercial property at 60%. You don't have to have differential, but you could have assessment ratios that are constant for all properties. So that would be one way to do it. So you'd say, okay, here's the market value. We're going to assess everybody at 90% of market value. So the problem isn't having an assessed value less than market value. It's having an assessment ratio that varies. That's where you get the inequities, and that's where the problems come in. The other thing, of course, you could do is through rate adjustments. And that's, of course, what Measure 5 did. I mean, Measure 5 was, in effect, a rate limit that posed a limit on the amount that local governments and the various districts could charge. So,
In fact, Don McIntyre, who wrote Measure 5, suggested one solution is to keep the Measure 5 structure but lower the rate to 1% instead of 1.5%, which reflects reality.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So those would be ways to do it. You know, and you could also look, and one of the suggested solutions is to try to find, maybe you could make some adjustments for periods when there is unusual market changes. If we are in a real estate boom and properties are rising 10 or 15%, maybe you put some limit on, you'd have to make sure it's a proportional one, though, that properties would, as long as they stay within that same ratio, then I think you would be... you would avoid this problem.
You done?
Yeah.
Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Paul, you mentioned one of parameters being ability to pay, but then we run into the problem of when somebody owns, two people buy a house, each $200,000. 10 years down the road, one of them sells, and it's now worth $400,000. So the ability to pay comes from the purchaser of that house, not the existing owner. But then you've got the inequity of two houses next to each other. One's paying twice as much taxes as the other because the fair market value is redone upon point of sale. But the ability to pay, that parameter there, throws another whole cog in the wheel, because the ability to pay comes from being able to go get a mortgage and buy a house at a higher value than somebody who's been living in the house next door for 10, 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree, Senator Telfer. And I think this is where where taxpayers have problems with the property tax system in general. And you know, I think it's pretty consistent across the country. You ask taxpayers what's their least favorite tax, property tax usually wins in most states, even states with low property taxes. And I think that's the very reason, is that people tend to think of ability to pay as liquid assets, which are very closely tied, of course, to income, and not in terms of wealth. But property tax is really a wealth-based tax. The problem with residential property is it isn't very liquid. So, and that's why you've seen states have come up with certainly more tax relief type programs than we have for seniors, for example, homestead exemptions. Those kinds of things have been efforts to try to deal with that, so people are not forced to liquidate because they can't make their annual payments.
Senator Rosenbaum.
So, thanks, Paul. I mean, just adding my voice to how much work went into this, clearly. But in terms of the options that you're laying out, so Measure 50 specifically exempted itself from those constitutional equity provisions that would otherwise apply?
Yep.
And so it would require,
can we do that?
So it would require a vote of the people to then amend the Constitution to change that language. And then what you're saying is, if that equity went back into this law, then the legislature would be obligated to do something about the inequity, basically. But that does require a vote.
If that were repealed, Senator Rosenbaum, then Measure 50 would become unconstitutional. And so whether it was actually thrown out by a court, whether we actually went through the process to throw it out by the court, or whether there was a time period, you know, for the legislature to come up with something that did meet the requirements, once that exemption is removed, then Measure 50 is, you know, prima facie unconstitutional.
That sounds like a real brain teaser, actually. So then, of the other options that you're laying out, are there ones there that do not require an amendment that requires a vote of the people, or do they all require a vote of the people?
All of those options, Senator Rosenbaum, would require an amendment, and in fact, depending on how they're constructed, possibly a revision.
So that's a pretty thorny wicket to
pass through. And I think this is where... really where a lot of discussion got to on the restructuring task force is that there's very little you can change about the key elements of Measure 50 without a constitutional change. And that's, of course, one of the features that makes it very inflexible. Mm-hmm. And this is, in fact, we had basically this issue came up with the taxpayer you heard from last interim, Bob James, in Eagle Point. And, you know, he was making that case that my property is clearly assessed out of line with what it should be. And the assessor said, well, yes, that was a problem when it was initially assessed, but now there's nothing I can do. It's in the Constitution. So there wasn't anything that can be done to correct those kinds of problems that get built up in the system.
Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, thank you.
I personally find the last option quite appealing, because I think what it would do, looking at this in a two-step process, it would educate the public to the inequities. I mean, people generally know it, but they don't know it. And once you establish that equity provision, then you have a backstop. We have a backstop. This is probably harder than comprehensive tax reform to get this done, because it's dealing mostly with residential.
Yes.
And so to have that as a backstop to craft a solution, there would be no easy, simple solution. So I personally find that would be quite an attractive first step to solving a very complex problem.
Well, and it would, you know, and I want to meet with legislative council to go through the steps of how it would be, because basically what you're doing is asking the voters to approve something that will basically blow up the property tax system. And so you have to have a credible system in place. What I thought of when I came up with this approach was, there, I would really like to find some way to get the tax policy back into the statutes and out of the Constitution, because we're a changing world. I mean, who could have predicted the property tax boom or the bust? We have to be able to do our jobs when it comes to instilling fairness, instilling adequacy in the tax system. And you always have, of course, the referral process. You know, if you're too far off what the voters are willing to accept, that's one thing. But you have to be able to at least tweak it, you know, as time goes on. That's what the legislature is all about. So, but it is a tricky thing. Implementing this would be, you know, it would be politically a good thing, because nobody likes unfairness. I mean, it just goes against the grain. Senator Telfer?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I have not read the report, so maybe you refer to it in here. But did you have any input from the county assessors who have to deal with this, and they're the ones getting the phone calls, and as to what they think is a fix, that since they deal with it every day and probably a lot?
That's a great segue to ask our assessors to come
up. We have assessors here, including for your own county.
And they were very invaluable to us for getting the data together and giving us direction and helping us formulate this. So I'll ask them to come forward.
Assessors unite.
I think you set us up, Paul.
They have the solution.
And I'd like to, before you get started, to thank you all for all your hard work on this report and on this analysis, because you're right there. You probably don't have time to do this kind of stuff with all the work you have to do. So thank you very much on behalf of the whole committee. You identify yourself in what order you want and take it away.
Left to right. I'll start down here. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Scott Lankin. I'm the Deschutes County Assessor. So I guess I would like to start off by thanking Paul and Day and his crew. I think they did an excellent job on the report, kind of identifying the issues and whatnot. And I'll probably actually have a few copies on my front counter when I mail tax statements out. we'll touch a little bit, and it seems like maybe Deschutes County is one of the county's leading the pack on the downward in the market right now. It is a different world right now, and we're seeing drastically different outcomes. Of course, everything I'm going to be talking about is all preliminary. We're in the middle of right now of putting together our tax rolls, so we'd mail statements next month. But Deschutes County is seeing where last year we had less than 2% of our total accounts where their market value is lower than that Measure 50 maximum assessed. We're seeing 20% this year. I took off 30% of the value of our market value in Deschutes County because of what happened
overall.
Overall 30%. And what happened in calendar year 2009, we fell off a cliff as far as the depreciating markets. So now we're entering into an era, too, where we've been talking about these horizontal inequities and the different bases, but each year the typical account, they're on their base and their market values did whatever the market did. Their assessed values kept growing at 3%. Well, I now have 20% where my assessed value is actually going down. I've got the remaining 80% that the value is going up the 3%. So I'm not sure how I'm going to exactly explain it, and I know I'm not looking forward to it. Well, now I'm going to have people coming in and having, you know, I took off 30, 40% of their value. And maybe the house across the street, I took off 30 or 40% of their value also. But one of them it just narrowed the gap, and their assessed value still went up 3, so their taxes went up.
Mm-hmm.
And right across the street, because maybe the gap was narrower, we've now crossed those lines and their taxes are going down. So
would you say, and one of the questions I had is in this plunging property value environment, do the discrepancies get worse or better as the market value gets closer to the assessed value?
You know, I guess that's all in perspective. Because you're still on the lesser of the two. And I think that most people look at, this study looked at, you know, the discrepancy between market value and that Measure 50 value.
Right.
Most people are looking at it as on tax burden.
Right. And so the tax burden discrepancy, that's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, I don't. In some ways it makes it worse.
Because
I mean, it might give an opportunity, though, if there was to be a change where you wanted to look at the ratio between market value and maximum assessed value, that they're now tighter and it might be easier to sell. I don't know. But I think as far as with one person's taxes going down and another one's going up with similar properties.
So in a case like that, just think of some particulars that you can think of where the one person's tax is going up and the other's is going down for similar properties. In those cases, I'm having trouble wrapping my mind around, are those cases where the person who is going down was paying a lot more in taxes or a lot less in taxes?
Well, they might have been paying the exact same in taxes, but because of the ratio between that property's market value and assessed value, the tighter it was, now it adds kind of another set of problems or of issues of inequities, because you didn't have both. You didn't have it where, in one case, it might actually kind of correct what was an inequity. In another case, you could have where they had the exact same taxes, but because of that ratio internally in the property itself, now you've given a reduction to one and increased another. So,
and do you think in Deschutes County that the awareness of the inequities is getting greater over time?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, I don't know if
I've not read it yet. I heard about it.
Yeah, we made the front page of the local paper today.
Oh, I think I'm in that story.
Yeah, you're in that, and Senator Toeffler and myself, and actually Don McIntyre and Bill Sizemore are too. So
great.
So to answer your question, yes, I would think that, yeah, it's becoming much more.
It is now.
Good. Well, I think, you know, a lot of this is, I mean, I had a gentleman come into my office last session who was really being very badly disadvantaged for having been on the historic property exemption. And it was Measure 50, because he would have done so much better under Measure 50 had he not been in the program.
Oh.
And I asked him, I said, well, how did you vote on Measure 50? He said, well, I voted for it. I said, well, you know, that's what you voted for, and now you're paying more taxes because of it. So it's definitely an education process. So do you have anything else to add?
Oh, I'll turn it over to these guys. But, yeah, I think that it'll be interesting. The longer we stand in the system, I think it's not going to get tighter. It's going to get worse. So it's just a matter of time before when do the voters of the state decide enough is enough and they want to change it again, and how maybe we can possibly be proactive and address those concerns ahead of time instead of possibly another initiative with the unforeseen consequences that we end up getting.
I really appreciate you coming to the rainy side of the mountains to share this, and open up to any more questions if there are any before we move on. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chairman Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Bob Roman. I'm the Clackamas County Assessor, and what I will tell you is a little bit, it's consistent with what you've heard, but maybe the story's a little bit different. We don't have some of the extremes that Scott may have seen in Deschutes County. In Clackamas County, we have a very diverse county, but we had appreciation that was probably fairly consistent around the county. And now we're seeing declining values that outside of Happy Valley, which is probably our worst area or an area that's seen the most, saw most of the most rapid development, as well as some of the deepest declines. You know, we've actually had consistent declines around the county. So in Clackamas County, we probably maybe have 2% of our real market value accounts where the market value is now the assessed value. So not quite as extreme as what Scott has seen in his market. But I think what it does is it highlights the discussion about the difference in equity within the tax system, because you can go to each county and you could have a fairly dramatic difference in the story that they might tell, depending upon how rapid their appreciation in values was and how rapid a decline in values they're seeing now. And the problem is exacerbated because those are different within the county, and you will see areas within your county, which leads to this issue of horizontal inequities, because you have areas that have rapidly appreciated and areas that haven't appreciated as quickly. So this committee, I think, has spent a lot of time, and I give them a lot of credit, and certainly you, Chairman Burdick, because you spent a lot of time on this property tax system. And I know that you've listened to this before and understand the complexity that's involved with this system and the complexity that you might be facing in trying to change it. It's a situation where you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard spot. What was traded for equity really was equity for stability and predictability. Mm-hmm. To get all of those factors together in a system is really challenging. So, you know, are there answers to what direction you might consider? Well, certainly, if you're looking at an equitable system and you're going to use value as a measure, going back to real market value would probably be considered a more equitable system. Certainly, the difficulty would be getting there.
Yeah, you just put your finger on that, that's for sure. You talked about the, you haven't had that many cases where the market value has come down to assessed value. How about the tax burden itself for similarly situated properties. How is the horizontal inequity in your county as it pertains to the actual amount of taxes paid by similarly situated property owners?
Well, we probably have a county where that's very difficult to assess. Unlike Multnomah County, for example, which was one of your study counties, in Clackamas County, we have 17 cities, we have, 20-some school districts, and so we have dramatically different rates of taxation based on the districts that are providing service. So, that...
Special living, you mean local option? Sure. I'm talking about the basic Measure 50 tax burden, aside from the local levies, which can go clear up to the...
Can be very dramatically different.
Yeah. It can be very... So if you have someone in a $300,000 house over here, and then another one in a different part of the county or down the street or whatever, how, are they pretty much paying the same throughout the county, or are they very different?
No, we have some differences. And I think, as Scott mentioned, those differences are starting to be, become more of an issue with the public, because especially when you've had homes that have been sold and you have new purchasers and you have people that are comparing tax statements around areas, our ratio between maximum assessed value and real market value on an annual basis, has changed anywhere from 6 to 9% as the fluctuations with real market value and assessed value. So if you have homes that are built 1 year apart, you can have almost a 10% difference in the value, the assessed value, that we would attribute to that newer home.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get at, is how extreme.
But it's not as extreme as you will see examples in Multnomah County, because we haven't had that diversity where you've had areas that have had such dramatic and rapid increase in real market values compared
before,
to that.
Before Measure 50.
Before Measure 50.
Yes.
And since Measure 50.
Questions? Thank you. Okay, batting cleanup is...
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. My name is Annette Spickard, and I'm the Lane County Assessor down in Eugene. I'll echo what my colleagues have already told you, and maybe just add a couple of things. Lane County is a little different from these two counties in that we have a substantially large rural geographic area. And so while we see some of the inequities within the city limits, for example, in City of Eugene or City of Springfield, the differences that Senator Burdick alluded to a moment ago, where you have somebody outside the city or in another part of the county compared to in the city limits, from the tax levy side, the folks in the rural areas definitely pay less, even if they have a similarly valued property, and that's just by virtue of the fact that they're not paying for city services. So we do see substantial variations between the amount of tax rates applied to folks as well. In our county, what we're preliminarily seeing for the upcoming tax roll is about 8% of our accounts are now below the maximum assessed value. And a couple of things I would just mention that I don't think have been brought up yet. There's also... I think what we are hearing, what I am hearing at our local office, is that folks are noticing these differences in the Measure 50 inequities, are questioning it, are contacting me and asking about it and how that 3% works. So we spend a lot of time with taxpayer education, customer contact, that type of thing. But their frame of reference is that this is a recession. These are hard times. It makes no sense in a recession that there's an automatic 3% increase, even if I'm still below my market value. They just don't, there's a disconnect between that 3% and what they're feeling financially with the economy. The other thing I would mention is that over time, I think that the legislature has attempted to address in bits and pieces around the edges of the property tax system ways to give relief through the exemptions. So we have a lot of property tax exemption and special assessment programs that also create, I guess, inequities, you might say, in terms of if you're just looking at a broad brush general comparison of if the property is worth this, and this one is worth this, and they're paying different amounts, that could be part of it as well because of the we have over 100 plus different exemption and special assessment programs now. And so I think that's something that doesn't take constitutional referral to look at those, but that is something that's developed over time with the property tax exemption programs.
Are there really 100 of them?
I think so. We just went through the list the other day.
122.
Yeah, there's a lot.
The things they never told me.
Right.
I would add that both Bob and Annette have helped us go through that list of tax expenditures with the intent of introducing a committee bill in the House that would be essentially like House Bill 2067 that would set sunset dates for all those exemptions. So a number of them have sunset dates, but it would be to set up a system for review again.
And I presume you all would favor that kind of legislation.
Put
them on a sunset schedule.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it's good to examine the policy choices for why they exist, and is it still valid today and a good program, and are people participating and that type of thing.
Could you give us an example of some of the more esoteric ones that might not be?
Let's see, I think I actually have the list.
Wouldn't readily come to mind.
Well, we have, you know, of course, the government property one, so, you know, things that are in the federal government. We have, for example, some that are around, you know, if you're a processor of egg products.
Of what product?
Eggs.
Eggs.
Go get some chickens.
You know, there's a variety of, I don't know if you want me to read all of these off, aircraft that are being repaired, farm labor housing, nursery stock. The one that came, I think, in the 09 session was around the greenhouses that nurseries use for growing.
Houses.
Yeah, so that type of thing.
We adopted that, so it must be good.
Two of those you that you mentioned we did in 2008.
Yeah. Oh, okay, crab pots. I mean, there's a variety of things that each have their own, you know, constituency that are interested in receiving that exemption for the, you know, economic reasons for their businesses or what have you. So, of course, we have, like, veterans exemptions for people from the military, that type of thing. So, but yes, there is a very large list. It's in your tax expenditure report that you get from Department of Revenue. So.
Any other questions? Thank you all for coming. I really appreciate it. And we want a copy of that Ben Bulletin story.
Oh, okay.
Paul will arrange for that. And I see back and lurking back there in the back row, Reese from Multnomah County. You want to say anything? Everything's been said. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It's home in my driveway.
I will. Thank you.
And, Madam Chair, I just did have one comment, kind of for the good of the order, that Senator Morse made me think of this by what he said, that I do think that it's absolutely true that this is a very messed up situation. You know, that in light of the testimony we heard, we've managed to achieve a system that has none of these elements of equity, stability, or predictability, and it also lacks a lot of other things. However, putting something in front of the voters, which is just acknowledging that we have a very unfair and messed up situation without a solution, is probably not a recipe for success, because then all we've done is kind of, I mean, people could very well say, well, you're right, it's messed up, but you're not really offering us anything to fix it, and so it's sort of like the devil you know versus the one you don't know. And that would not be helpful. That wouldn't really get us closer to a solution. So I think, you know, maybe part of the work here is to really figure out sort of officers, are there at least some incremental improvements that we could make that would really seem to provide meaningful help to the situation? I mean, it's certainly a hard problem to solve.
And there are some of those. They would all require a constitutional amendment. For example, League of Oregon Cities, right now, you know, within the, if you're below the Measure 5 threshold, 1.5%, you can do a levy or a local option. Right now, the time limit on that is 5 years. The League of Oregon Cities would like to extend that to 10 years. Of course, levies were never intended to, you know, for core services, but that's what we're stuck with. So something, what I told them is, you know, I certainly would support that, but the problem is far deeper than that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your comment. Senator Hatton.
It seems like if we do something other than what Senator Morris alluded to a little while ago on a ballot measure, there would be the situation where people would look at their tax bill and what it would change, and if it's, they'll vote based on whether they'll pay more or less, and that's how you determine the outcome of the election.
Right.
That's what I would do.
And that's why, wouldn't we all? Well, and that's, you raise a good point, and one of the opportunities that we have is we are now at a situation where market is very close to assessed.
Right.
You know, if you switch to a market system, you're going to have fewer people who take a hit from that. So it's very complicated, though. And I voted no on Measure 50, both in the legislature and in the public. And that vote looks better and better every day. There were only a handful of us. Because Measure 47 was worse. Are there any other comments from the committee? Thank you. Paul, we have one last little agenda on our work plan. Do you have any parting thoughts on this one before we move to work plan?
I think the committee's spent a lot of time on this and getting well grounded, and so, you know, I don't think there's a perfect solution. I don't think there ever is in tax policy. But I think you've heard a lot of perspectives, and there are certainly areas to look at that could improve the system. So I think it's certainly worth worth further discussion, and it may be that the environment we're in now may be more conducive to considering alternatives than the environment we were in, say, 5 years ago.
Okay, and thanks again for the quality of this report, and day two, wherever you are. There you are, Dave. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just a question, Paul, thinking outside the box. In our comprehensive revenue restructuring, did we look at, are there any states that do not have a property tax? They have some other mechanism of funding local services?
Senator Morris, there's not a state that doesn't have a property tax. There are some that are very low, and as last time I recall looking at the rankings, the southern states are lowest, and Alabama was typically at the bottom of that. And there are different ways to do it. You know, there are states that, as I mentioned earlier, that will assess property at lower than its market value, and you see that pretty widespread. Sometimes it's a lot of times formalized, sometimes it isn't. It's just an assessor practice that you keep your assessed values well below market value. But all the states do rely on the property tax to some extent. Of course, it's the oldest tax, and it was really the primary source of revenue for states prior to the Depression, so including Oregon. So it does have a longer history, and what's happened over time is the states have evolved income and sales taxes and other revenue sources, and really kind of left the property tax to the local governments. And that's still basically what it does is, and there's good theoretical reasons for that too. I mean, it is a local revenue source that provides local services. You have more of a nexus there. So, but it's still by far the largest tax revenue source for local governments in the country.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that, and thank you for our witnesses. We appreciate you being here. So we have a quick discussion on our work plan.
Madam Chair, I just put that in there for an opportunity for the committee to discuss any work going into it. Remind you, we do have a meeting in November 19th, and then you'll have a December legislative days meeting for pre-session file committee bills. And just to let you know, remind you what we're working on, we are working on some bills around reserve policy. We have a series of sunset extension bills we talked about with you last time about setting up that tax credit sunset process. There's still some discussion with leadership about exactly how to proceed on that in relations with the House committee. We have requested a bill. As you recall, Director Archenko mentioned at the last meeting that there were some amnesty participants that had installment plans that were clearly behind in those plans, and looking at some statutory ways to give them a little bit of flexibility in dealing with that. And then the last thing would be to develop some concepts around Measure 50 reform, which we haven't done anything formal at this point.
We're also going to at least have a shell bill on Measure 67, possible revisions to that program, but I can't remember whether we're going to start that in the House or start it here.
Did you say, Paul, there would be some legislation on something introduced on Measure 50?
We have that in our work plan. We have not gotten to that part to make a request yet. We have a couple weeks.
Depends on whether we survive some of the other things we're doing. Okay, any other questions, comments? We put in a long day, my hard-working committee.
So it's not over yet.
We've all earned whatever we're doing this evening.
More meetings.
More meetings. All right, we are adjourned. Turn.